The Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Honey, the online shopping platform that helps consumers save time and money, is building a Boulder office and looking for software engineers to join the team. Find out more at joinhoney.com/careers. Welcome to the Boulder Tech Podcast. I'm your host, Joel Davis. We have a unique startup and tech community here on the edge of the Rockies, and we want you to know about it. The Boulder Tech Podcast features conversations with leaders, thinkers, and influencers, sharing their views on what's happening in Boulder's rapidly evolving tech scene. These interviews were recorded during the 9th annual Boulder Startup Week. When it started in 2009, Boulder Startup Week was the first event of its kind, anywhere. Now, Startup Weeks are held around the world. It's a great example of Boulder's position on the leading edge of tech and the future. Our guest for episode number 8 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is Beth Hartman. Beth works at the Electric Power Research Institute, or EPRI, as project manager for the Incubate Energy Network, an initiative funded by the Department of Energy to strengthen connections between clean energy innovators around the country. We talk about new developments in energy technology, factors affecting the transition from fossil fuel-based energy to renewables, energy access for underserved populations, nuclear power's role in our energy future, the good things about Boulder's energy approach, and what we can do to improve it. Tell me a little bit about EPRI.
EPRI is a research nonprofit that was founded in 1972 as the kind of collective R&D group for all the electric utilities in the U.S., after a pretty large blackout. The Great Northeastern Blackout left about 30 million people in the dark for a little over 12 hours in the Northeast, and Congress was decidedly not impressed. So they encouraged the utility industry to do a better job keeping the lights on going forward. Most of our research focuses on more near-term technology, integrating existing equipment into the grid, keeping things from blowing up, keeping the lights on, etc. And then my group, the Technology Innovation Group, we look longer term. What types of innovations are going to impact the energy system in the coming 10 to 20 years, and what might that look like for the future?
Is your focus more on a national or global perspective, or local as well? Or?
We work with almost all the utilities in the U.S. and then in about 35 countries around the world as well. We have a little over 400 utility members total, and about 30% of those are international.
And what is your involvement with Startup Week entail?
So for the last 4 years, I have been running the energy track at Boulder Startup Week. I'm very passionate about energy, and there are a lot of really innovative groups in the Boulder area working on cool clean energy technologies. So I've really enjoyed doing that. This year, I enjoyed speaking on some of the panels and just participating generally. I think it's great to be running a track, but 4 or 5 years, that was a good run for me, and I'm excited to have somebody else take that over from now. So we have the energy track this year and a sustainability and climate change track, which is really great to see kind of an expanding interest.
And what are some developments in energy technology that you're particularly excited about?
Oh, so many, but I would say sort of the falling costs of solar and batteries are really exciting, just because if you can have almost free energy, then that's very cool. And in turn, electric vehicles are exciting. If you can transition things that use fossil fuels like transportation and heating off fossil fuels into electricity, and if all of that electricity is clean, then that goes a long way towards solving the emissions challenge that we face. So yeah, I'd have to say solar batteries and EVs, those are pretty fun.
Do the recent moves by the administration placing tariffs on solar panels and that sort of thing, how do you see that affecting the marketplace?
So first, I have to make the caveat that EPRI is a research nonprofit focused on technology. So we don't advocate for any given policy. We try to inform policymakers of the facts so they can make good decisions. Some of the recent tariffs were not ideal, but in the long run, the falling cost of solar is going to overwhelm any type of tariff that might be implemented. It's going to be a blip. And the U.S. is not the only country in the world. So if you go to China, they're doing a lot of things very, very quickly. And it's good to see leadership in clean energy going forward.
Has EPRI been involved at all with the municipalization process in Boulder?
We have not. We do work with all types of utilities, so from large investor-owned utilities like Xcel to small municipal utilities and co-ops. So happy to collaborate with any Boulder municipal utility that might eventually be formed. But once again, being a technology nonprofit research-focused organization, we try not to get involved with questions that are a little bit more policy-oriented. As a private citizen, personally, I have been quite engaged in that discussion.
Being someone in the energy industry, do you deal only with renewables, or are you talking, do you have relationships and connections with big oil as well?
Working in the utility industry, we mostly focus on renewables as well as natural gas and coal-fired power plants, trying to make those operate more efficiently and more cleanly, slash use them as a bridge to transition to more renewables in the system overall. We do interact with oil and gas companies in the sense that they are also getting much more interested in renewables and sort of making the transition to a clean energy future because they see that is going to be good for their balance sheet eventually. So for example, BP Ventures recently reached out to support many of the incubators in the network that I manage. Shell also recently started to work more closely with the National Renewable Energy Lab here in Golden, Colorado, which runs their own incubator program. So we see a lot of interest from oil and gas companies in electric and clean energy technologies going forward. Some of them are even starting to install EV chargers at their gas stations around the world.
Well, that's really interesting to hear, because that's a question that I've had about energy for a while now, is if the science, and not that I've delved too deeply into it, but from what I've seen, what I've read, it seems like we are, you know, we're running out of oil and the cost of extracting it is getting higher and it's terrible for the environment. And there's all sorts of reasons why we should be turning full tilt towards renewables. Mm-hmm. And so my question has been, why haven't the big oil companies and the big energy producers, the fossil fuel producers, already pivoted in a large way towards renewables? Because they've got the money to invest in it and the infrastructure, or the means to create the infrastructure to really move things forward very quickly. And I wonder why it's taken them so long to do this.
Yes. Well, that is a very complicated question, but I would start with your first point where you say we're running out of oil. We're probably not constrained by actually running out of oil more than the question of access that you mentioned. It's getting more expensive to drill in remote locations, but also the main limiting factor in the long run will be the amount of emissions created by using that oil. So one of my favorite quotes is, the Stone Age never ended for a lack of stones. It's not going to end the oil age for lack of oil. It will end because of economics. I mean, renewable energy is just getting cheaper and better, and there are lots of reasons beyond that why it's good to have clean air. It's good for people to breathe clean air, etc. So I think the main reason why they haven't transitioned more quickly yet is because of the question of stranded assets, and they're just trying to get as much money as they can out of the investments they've already made before moving forward.
What about tech and energy? And it's interesting to me, it's sort of a dichotomy, it seems, in that tech has a lot of solutions to our energy problems, but tech and computers and all of that also consume a lot of energy. And I'm wondering if you have any thoughts on that.
The general trend in technology that consumes electricity has been to get more and more efficient over time. Like, your refrigerator now uses vastly lower amounts of electrons than the refrigerators of 10 or 20 years ago. And a lot of that is honestly due to government programs like Energy Star and the research we do in our national labs, et cetera. So, you know, you now have a smart computer in your pocket that uses tiny, tiny amounts of energy compared to the first computers that were ever built. The bigger issue, from my perspective, is energy access for the 1.3 billion people who don't currently have access to energy or unreliable access to energy. So if you're going to electrify India, China, Nigeria, etc., you want to make sure that you do that in a clean, renewable, distributed way. Like, the reason we built the grid in this country the way that we did was because of the technologies we had when we built it back in the early 1900s, mostly. So that's why we have huge centralized energy plants and large transmission lines to distribute the energy from where it is produced to where it is consumed in your house. Now we have solar panels and batteries and other things. So if we were to start from scratch at this point, you would design microgrids connected to each other to form more modular internet style network of energy, which is what you can build now in developing economies. Just as they leapfrogged over landline telephones straight to cell phones, they're leapfrogging the need for a centralized electric grid to a distributed renewable system, which is exciting to see. Because if everyone in India and China, et cetera, relied on a centralized fossil fuel powered grid, that would be extremely problematic from an emissions perspective.
And are those countries, are they adopting these new technologies and expanding their access to electricity?
Oh, yes. It's really exciting to see, especially working in clean energy innovation, some of the modular microgrid solar powered stuff that people are designing, like shipping containers that you just send to Kenya and open it up, and there's solar powered stuff for your cell phones and charging electric motorcycles and generating clean water on site, and just like incredible systems that you can. So Puerto Rico is another great example where now that they're trying to rebuild their electric system that was devastated in the hurricane, they have this opportunity to build a much more modular, like resilient, secure system that's based on renewables and microgrids, because there's always going to be wind and solar somewhere. And if you can get at least a little bit of it and put it in a battery, then you're better off than if you're totally stuck with a transmission line down and no oil shipments on the horizon.
What would you say is the biggest obstacle to even wider spread renewable adoption? Is it just a matter of time, or are there active forces that you're battling?
Again, no comment on the policy, but I think we're hitting an inflection point. It's really exciting right now to see not only the falling costs, but the increased interest in stuff like EVs and smart thermostats. People are just excited about it. And I think thanks to Tesla, a lot of that has to do with making belief kind of cooler than it was when they first launched it. So yeah, I think there's a lot of kind of consumer-driven side of it, as well as economics, falling costs. Globally, the policy environment is good. The Paris Accord does still exist, and most people are extremely motivated to stay in that agreement.
Not to get too doomsday, but how tenuous is the U.S. grid?
There are both physical and cybersecurity questions that need to be considered when you talk about security of the grid. So you can take out a substation with like a machine gun, or you could use a malicious virus to hack the software that's managing a nuclear power plant or something like that. So that's why all utilities and EPRI are extremely focused on security. It's one of our like biggest concerns, especially seeing some recent current events of how grids in other parts of the country or in the world, have been potentially compromised. So that's why the electric system is designated as like critical infrastructure, because if the grid goes down, you can't have lights, but you also can't do commerce. Water systems shut down, municipal lighting systems shut down. Like it would get very chaotic very quickly.
Yes. And fortunately for now, the power doesn't go out very often here, but even when it does, a little voice in the back of my head says, there's no guarantee that it has to come back on.
No. Yeah. And we're quite used to it being pretty reliable in this country. So people get pretty upset pretty quickly when the lights are out for even more than an hour or two, which is what we've been conditioned to expect.
Does what you do include nuclear power?
Yes, nuclear is our largest research sector by funding. It's critical from a security perspective, as also a zero carbon source of energy. There are, of course, people who don't support nuclear from the waste management perspective. There are some interesting new nuclear reactors that are more modular, molten salt. I'm not a nuclear engineer, but there are some really interesting new startups in the nuclear space that are smaller, more modular, and safer than the current reactors that we have. But in this country, the policy environment makes it more difficult to deploy new technologies, especially in the nuclear space. So they may be focused more on other markets.
but you think or Epri thinks that nuclear is part of the power equation going forward.
Yes. If you want to have the lowest emission system possible, then you should look at all available technologies to achieve that. And also, sorry, I'll add it too, from a reliability perspective, nuclear plants can be, they operate continuously unless there's an issue. So solar doesn't work if the sun isn't shining, etc.
Right. But will batteries sort of help?
Yes. But if we do have more storage and more microgrids and efficiency and demand response, then it just depends on what system you want to design. But most people think that nuclear will continue to be a part of the electric system.
What's the level of interest in energy in the startup community?
I think it's growing. I think it has been a pretty high level of interest for the last few years. I've always had my sessions be full for the energy track. But now that we have the energy track and sustainability and the climate change track, and those sessions have all been full that I've seen too. So I think there's a tremendous amount of interest in the community, and not just my perspective being in the electric industry comes from that side of things, but there's a lot of interest in food and agriculture and water and other elements of sustainable living in general. There's just so many parts of transitioning to a more stable economy. If you look at Project Drawdown, for example, with their top 80 solutions for transitioning and combating climate change, the top 10 are mostly in food and land use, as well as educating women and girls and family planning. And then the number one is refrigerants, which is not exciting, but it's important.
What of all the exciting things happening in energy right now, what are you most excited about?
I guess just seeing it get cool again. Like back in the 50s, electric utilities were kind of cool because it was like the trendy thing to purchase your new electric stove or whatever appliance you were doing in the baby boomer phase of expanding wealth and houses and all of that. Electricity was kind of like this exciting futuristic type of thing. And then it became a little bit more of a taken for granted commodity. And now it's becoming kind of exciting again to talk about EVs and microgrids and what can we do going forward.
Do we have the capability right now? As someone who lives, you know, I live in South Boulder. Trees aside and city regulations and all that, is the technology there for me to power my own house right now if I wanted to?
Sure. I think because you live in a place that has a grid, that wouldn't be the most efficient or cost-effective way to do it. You would have to dramatically oversize the amount of solar and batteries you put on your house just to make sure that if we had a week of cloudy days in a row, you would still have energy. So the better solution would be to put solar and batteries and still be connected to the grid. So for like economy and of scale and efficiency purposes. But if you really want to go off grid and live completely disconnected from everyone else, you can definitely do it.
Right in the middle of town.
Yes. There are some policy considerations that you need to take into consideration for sure. Another thing that a lot of people don't think about as much when they think about climate change and reducing the impact of their own lifestyle is it's not just about solar and EVs and getting clean energy. It's about how big is your house? Like, do you walk places? Do you have dense neighborhoods where you have affordability and diversity and walkability and all of these things? Because that's a tremendous source of emissions. California just required all new houses to have solar panels on their roofs. It would have probably made a bigger impact if they required all new houses to have 5 more houses on their roof so that you would have like dense neighborhoods and people walking places. Solar is good too, but there are a lot of sort of complicated factors.
Do you have any thoughts on how Boulder is managing all this? I mean, I know we definitely talk the talk here.
We do talk the talk.
Are we walking the walk?
I think we could be walking the walk a little better. I think we do very well with the biking. Like, we have one of the most bikeable cities in this country. We do have a lot of good bus routes set up with RTD. I think we could do better encouraging RTD to transition to electric buses a little more quickly. But I think the big elephant in the room, not just from an energy use and climate change perspective, but from an affordability and diversity perspective, is housing. And we need to do a better job with zoning and figuring out how to encourage more affordable and smaller houses to be built here.
Beth Hartman, thank you.
Cheers.
That was Beth Hartman from EPRI, the Electric Power Research Institute. Find out more about her work at incubateenergy.org. Episode number 8 of the Boulder Tech Podcast is presented by Boulder Startup Week finance track sponsor, BSW Wealth Partners. The Boulder Tech Podcast is made possible in part by Boulder Startup Week Platinum sponsors Matter, Zayo, Google, and Boulder Engineering Studio. We're also presented by Glider, a Colorado-based community movement and nonprofit that produces Boulder's Ignite and TEDx events, as well as Boulder Startup Week. Learn more and consider a donation at glider.com. Thanks to Dojo 4 for providing space for our podcast studio, and to KGNU Community Radio for the recording gear. Our intro music is by Echodeck, that's E-C-C-O-D-E-K. Hear more at echodeck.com. Our outro music is by Earthrise Sound System. You'll find them at earthrisesoundsystem.com. The Boulder Tech Podcast is produced by me, Joel Davis. Your feedback, criticisms, and comments are welcome. Reach me at joel@thevibrarian.co. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here for the next episode of the Boulder Tech Podcast.